hello, and welcome to Reality TV. It is Valentine's week, which means we get to learn who we want to hit upside the head when they say Happy Valentine's Day. This is your yearly PSA. If this is you, you're the person that says Valentine's Day, make this the year 2020, the year that you get it right. You drop the M, change it to an N. And while you're at it, let's drop the T from across. It's across. I want to hit you across the face when you say across. Now, a little heads up heading into the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing my best to get Patreon episodes and Reality TV episodes up on time. My dad is not doing the greatest. He's been in the hospital the last week, and I'm sure many of you know the drill when you have a sick family member. So I am here. I will do my best to get back to you with your emails and social media comments and these episodes, but just a little heads up, things are a little crazy right now. Now, speaking of Patreon, this week I'm going to be recapping Married at First Sight and Love After Lockup over on Patreon. Remember, I'm going to switch up those episodes so I make sure I cover all of our shows and rotate them in and out so you get what you pay for, right? And speaking of get what you pay for, very quickly, remember I had that special up through the end of this week. Normally it's a $20 level for the Stay Salty mug. It's really cute. Go check it out. But through the end of this week, I'm going to lock you in at that $15 price forever. There's also a $1 a month level. You'll get early ad-free episodes like the one you're listening to now. $5 gets you that and stickers and bonus episodes. I have over 100 of them on everything and anything. Go and check it out, please, at patreon.com/realitytvpod. You support the show, you support me, and I will forever and always love you. So go check that out. Coming up this week on Total Request Podcast, Amanda and I are so excited. We have been texting about this all week. We are going to be recapping the legendary Celebrity Wife Swap episode with Kate Gosselin and Kendra Wilkinson. Now, we just recapped an episode of The Girls Next Door, and I gotta tell you, after listening to, I was going to say read, but come on, let's be real. I don't really read that many books. I listened to Holly Madison say what she had to say about Kendra, and I've always loved her, but I kind of see that bitchy side of Kendra. So anyway, go check that out. That is at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. All those links are in the show notes. And I need to take a moment to wish Happy Valentine's Day to my newest Patreon subscribers, Kelly, Brooke, Meredith, Leah, Whitney, and Jenna. You are my Valentines, not my Valentimes. You're forever and always a Valentine in my heart. Now, in the spirit of love and Valentine's Day, let's get a witness up in here and talk about 90 Day Fiancé. Now, Angela is not quite as lucky as we are because she doesn't have anyone to witness the marriage between she and Michael. So she needs to go back to the United States and wait it out and torture us some more with their story, which is why I'm not talking about it because I can't stand Angela. And based on the previews for the reunion tell-all next week, Angela has learned nothing, and she's still a big old obnoxious bully. I don't even want to spend any more time on it. Let's move on to Anna and Marcel. Anna is really gunning hard for her Amazing Race dreams to come true. She's got her kids in the co-pilot seat. They're getting to the airport on a deadline. We've got a Turkish translator. Just kidding. Turns out we are all semi-fluent in Turkish at this point because marriage in English is also marriage in Turkish. And I also think suit was in there. And of course, you know, you just throw in a little chuka chuka, that means good. So marriage, chuka chuka, good, signed, sealed, delivered. He snores. I can't believe I've never thought about that before. Signed, sealed, delivered, he snores. I mean, that's marriage, right? Same difference. Now, let's talk about this marriage, this wedding. It was totally horrible, but also it was all love, right? I mean, even little Leo, he nailed the toast. It was so cute. And I'm a sucker for cute kids. I know I don't come across that way, but I'm telling you, I would love a little Leo in my life. If I could keep kids eternally at ages 4 to 5.5, I'd keep him there forever. He is in that perfect little zone. And I think Leo has got some real Chris Farley potential if he's given enough guidance and opportunity. So Anna, if you are listening, I'm telling you, I got a good eye for this shit. Get that kid into improv. He's already got the childhood trauma that every good comedian needs. He just needs the yes and a little refinement, and he's going to be cracking us up on SNL in a good, oh, I'd say 23 years from now. So all in all, the wedding was cute. The kids were cute. Was it tacky? Of course. Were the colors all mixed and matched and there were no honeycomb huppas anywhere around? Yes. Is it likely to require years of therapy for her kids? Of course. But was the jolly Turk happy and his dress barn wearing bride happy? Sure. Mazel tov and, I don't know, step on a honeycomb or some shit. So let's move on from there. And let's talk about Michael and Juliana. Not a whole lot of them this episode. I think we just need to give Sarah a show of her own. I love her. I know probably 75% of Twitter and Instagram cannot stand her, but I don't understand why. Give me a girl who can wear zero makeup, lounge on her ripped leather couch shamelessly, and be on national TV in her snack pants. That's a triple bingo to me. I just found my new best friend, and I know that she loves wine like I do because Michael is a wine sommelier or collector or trader or some shit. And let's just talk about her kids. I think they're a lot like my kids. They have the snarky comments, you know, like the thanks for leaving the door open for me, Max. I love that shit. It's the same shit that I hear every day at, 3:39 p.m. And it drives me insane at the time, but come on. Funny is funny. They're going to need that snarky sense of humor at some point in their life, as long as they are not assholes to me or other people in their lives. I guess I just see me in Sarah, and if that means that you don't like me, well, then I guess Sarah and I are going to be sharing the bottle of wine, crying about all of our internet trolls together in my fantasy world. Sarah, call me. So blah, blah, blah. Michael didn't get a prenush, but the kids' accounts are in a trust. So there you go. There's the show. Hit the snooze button. All right, moving on to Jasmine and Blake. This is where we can really get into the meat of this episode. Although I don't think Jasmine eats meat, do you? You know, it might be too hard on her soft fake teeth or some bullshit. I'm actually very anxious to see how Jasmine and Blake interact on this tell-all because as far as we've all seen, they don't even seem like they would be friends. Like, Jasmine is not even neutral about Blake. She never seems excited when he comes around. She doesn't appreciate when he gives her gifts or when he puts extra effort towards something. And I just can't continue to believe that this is a European thing. I mean, look at Blake. He's going all Edward Scissorhands on these roses. I've never seen anyone throw around scissors like that unless they're on 60 Days In and they're trying to shove a shiv up their ass. And this guy went to an actual flower market for you. You can't even muster up a thank you? Listen, I bought my wedding flowers for my bridesmaids and for all the tables from Sam's Club, okay? I don't even love roses, but that's what they sold and they worked for what I needed for the price that I had. So that's what we did. Dave and I, the day before the wedding, we were pulling a Blake and Edward Scissorhands, cutting and trimming and all that kind of bullshit. So I'm not all girly girl and expecting Jasmine to be the same as I am. Not at all. But her non-plussed reaction is just bizarre. I refuse to believe she is this European and this robotic. She has to have ulterior motives. That's the only reason she'd be uninterested in her own wedding. Even women who say, I just want a small wedding, it's not that big of a deal, have some sort of excitement or maybe a genuine smile, not a smile that's stifling a laugh when they get married. If she were only doing it for love, she would have at least looked at Blake in the eye when they were saying their vows. She was looking over her shoulder. She was looking at that mysterious young boy who was wearing a white vest in the background for no reason. And her sister, I saw her sitting next to a young guy. Maybe it was her husband, but that would be another weird match, just like Jasmine and Blake, because they postured themselves to look more like siblings than spouses. Now let's talk about Blake's mom walking down the aisle, because that for me was the best moment of the entire wedding. She walks Blake down, with her purse still on her arm. Amazing. It reminded me a lot when my grandma used to spend the night when I was younger, and she would insist that her purse be on the nightstand next to her bed every single night. You know, as if a burglar was going to break into our suburban home and take the time to rifle through her highly organized purse with coupons that were organized by food type and aisle, through all her prescriptions from her favorite doctor, Dr. Patel, because his wife was such a classy lady. And then, of course, prayer cards from every family member and friend from 1938 to the present. You know, come on. You can put the purse down on the chair. I don't think anyone's going to run through the park and grab your purse. If they were going to grab anything, it'd probably be, God, Jesus. Here, this is my karma. I'm making fun of these people saying that no burglar is going to come running through, and here's my dog barking because a random stranger's coming up to the door to probably kill me. I'm sorry, Mother Blake. You were right. Hold on to your freaking purse. Now let's talk about Tanya and Sinjin. Oh, just in time for my heart to jump out of my chest and be racing. I'm probably going to have a coronary event by the end of talking about Tanya. This bitch. It has been 2 weeks without any rage in my soul to be awakened by Tanya the Terrible, if you will. But here she is. She still does not recognize, even in the least, what a bitch she is. Sinjin's caveman teeth still scare the shit out of me, but that is nothing compared to the straight-up sociopathic person that is Tanya. Now, I did the research for you. I pulled up the DSM-5 criteria for sociopaths, and here are just a few. See if any of these check the box for you. Persistent lying or deceit to exploit others. I'm going to say that's a check because remember her little fake college program she had going on in Costa Rica? Being callous, cynical, and disrespectful of others. Check. Using charm or wit, barely, to manipulate others for personal gain or personal pleasure. Check. Arrogance, a sense of superiority, and being extremely opinionated. Impulsiveness or failure to plan ahead. Look at the wedding this episode. Hostility, significant irritability, agitation, lack of empathy for others, and lack of remorse. Poor or abusive relationships. Failure to consider the negative consequences of behavior or learn from them. Being consistently irresponsible and repeatedly failing to fulfill work or financial obligations. I can go on, but every single one of them checks the box so far. And I should have pulled up narcissistic personality disorder, but you know, TikTok, I need to leave time to rip this wedding ceremony into fucking shreds. So let's get into it. What do I have here? As long as he's actively working on it. Oh, right. So Sinjin was talking about that whole soulmate comment, and somehow Tanya thinks that it's Sinjin's problem. Like, we were talking about her being an asshole, and she wraps it up with, well, I think everything's okay. I mean, as long as he's actively working on it, right? And Sinjin just looks and nods and smiles. Like, is she that good in the sack that he's willing to put up with this? Fucking crazy. Now let's talk about the wedding. This is the kind of shit that I live for. I have prepared for this particular segment for my entire life. I have watched every season, every episode of TLC's A Wedding Story since the beginning. Kelly, you're one of my best friends. If you are listening right now, you can vouch for me. Since 1993, '94, we've been watching this show. We used to record it on VHS and we would binge the shit out of the episodes like it was our other part-time job that wasn't at the Wheaton Park District. Tanya's wedding, on the scale of all the weddings I have ever seen in my life on TV and in person, was one of the worst. It was bad, really bad, and I loved every cringy second of it. First, let's start with the plastic tablecloths. Stretch out a little bit. Single ply, no liner, no padded buffer between the rented tables and the 84-inch staticky plastic tablecloth that you get at Party City. Actually, I'm going to say dollar store. I don't even think Party City would put their name on that shit. So they throw down these light blue colored tablecloths for a red and black evening themed wedding. I'll proceed. And upon those tablecloths are several glass cylinder vases filled with light blue clear pebble stones, red fake roses, three of them, because Father, Son, Holy, essential marigold oils, and then filled to the brim with icy cold hose water. Combine all of that with a massive charcoal grill to create an ambiance that Tanya prides herself on. She loves to create an ambiance for her guests. I mean, get this chick a HGTV gig. Move out of the way, Joanna and Skipper, or whatever the hell that guy's name is. Tanya's here with her sweaty crotch and her bird bath to set the ambiance. Now, once this wedding fit for the neighborhood witch doctor and mister is complete, Tanya heads indoors for no shower. Remember, bird bath, because she didn't have time. Want to fucking throw up. She then recruits her friends to brush her disgusting, dirty, long hair and do her makeup, because that's what friends are for. And because Tanya is so unique, much edgy, she chose a black gown over pink satin, which was fitted to lift her boobs from atop her belly button. You know, with all these smarts Tanya claims to have, it is shocking to me that she's never run across something called a bra or a corset in any of her various studies. I swear to God, just watching this, I think I got sympathy stretch marks on my own boob just watching this chick week to week. It is painful. God, we haven't even gotten to the ceremony, have we? Okay, I gotta speed things up here. Tanya clomps down the aisle, looks decent in her black gown. I mean, she doesn't match St. John's beachy light blue with khaki look, but you know, hashtag edgy, hashtag feminist, hashtag whatever was on her shirt. I actually did look it up. It was some sort of release an immigrant from ICE or something. But St. John, I mean, he nails the vows, right? He kills it. He gets on his goddamn knees and promises to love this bitch. And she, in return, says she's going to promise to call him when she's drunk at the bar. And that's not all. Tanya thinks it's going to be amazing for her guests to watch her and St. John get matching tattoos. Yes, what every guest wants to do. Sit there even fucking longer, sweating, watching your frickin' disgusting, dirty teeth smile away. Like, this is the part of the movie, the part of the play where I get up and I go pee, I check my phone, and then I come back and I ask you what I missed, and it turns out the boring part is still going. Like, I would be pissed if I was a guest at that wedding and I got them a nice gift and I had to sit through all this shit. Oh, no, no, no. And outside, nonetheless. Like, I run hot all the time. I need air conditioning 12 months out of the year. So if I'm sitting out there, I'm sweating, I'm smelling charcoal, inhaling cancer, I'm going to be furious if I have to now sit through a tattoo session. Fuck these two, man. All right, Mike and Natalie. Well, Natalie is still a bitch. I mean, it's just that simple. She's 30 years behind reading the Ukraine adaptation of The Rules, and she's playing a very dangerous little coquettish game with Mike. He does not find it endearing, and I like Mike, which is why I'm furious to know that he is still filming with this chick and she's in Washington. But let's just talk about Mike in general. I think he is really one of the very few legitimately normal guys on this show, if not the only normal guy that we've seen on 90 Day Fiancé, which is why it's killing me that he is pursuing Natalie. She's a bitch. She's nasty. She's manipulative. And I think Mike can find a girl easily in Washington. Look amongst the people around you in your gorgeous surroundings. There has got to be a normal woman who is thrilled to be with a guy who's going to make pancakes for breakfast. I mean, I'm more of a skillet kind of girl with scrambled eggs and some Cholula on there. But find a girl who wears Patagonia and actually wears it hiking in the outdoors. Just dump Natalie. I mean, she's going to be pissed when she sees what happens to her curls in that sort of a humid, tropical, Pacific Northwest climate. Savor the trip and savor the Aussie sprunch spray. All right, Robert and Annie, they're getting married, and my cold black heart is starting to melt. It's starting to warm up a little bit, and although I highly disapprove of that red tux, I approve of cute little Bryson. He's adorable. And sure, he needs a little Mama Jody boot camp to get his little ninja kicking ass in check, but I would take that kid on my caseload any day. Much rather him than Teen Mom Leah's kids, because they definitely need probably a full week of boot camp in my house. Anyhow, he's adorable, and clearly he loves Annie, so Annie can't be that bad. Kids are a very good judge of people. So their wedding went off really without a hitch, but in true 90 Day Fiancé style. They have to edit it to look like Robert's going to back out of it and say, I can't do this. But instead, he gives Annie the engagement ring that she always wanted, and they live happily ever after. Now, next week, we get a two-night tell-all. So I'm guessing, what, Sunday, Monday night? So get ready for it. I think I'm most anxious and excited to see what this Michael and Natalie story is. And of course, Blake and Jasmine, gotta know what's going on there. And no doubt they're gonna carry all of those must-see moments into the second night, so don't hold your breath for it. All right, I will be back after a very quick break, and then we're gonna get into some 60 Days In. All right, episode 6, Squat and Cough. 60 Days In continues to be my number one favorite show on TV right now. If you aren't watching, I'm going to keep bugging you every single week. You have to get in. And sure, jump right in. You can go back and watch the other episodes later. Just get in while you can. So Matt and Jacob, Teapot, they are out. They are not coming back. And we have a new inmate, Tony. So first, let's start with Alex, because he wakes up along with Dennis in the men's pod to this shakedown. Alex is not 100% sure what his roommates have hiding in their cell, so he's worried. Sure enough, the guards in there find all these court papers that are hidden up in a light, and although there's nothing in it now, clearly there was some sort of drug in it at some time. So they call Alex in, and they ask him some questions, and then he's got to strip down, squat, and cough. Now, I also cough when I squat, but it's only because I'm out of shape, and those things fucking hurt once you do any more than, like, 10 squats. But he's naked, and it brings up a lot of feelings and issues, maybe some PTSD from being bullied when he was in school. And I think even if you weren't, if you were the most popular kid, squatting and coughing while you're being stripped down naked and you have guards staring at you, you're gonna have some PTSD after that. Now, out of nowhere, they tell Alex that he's gotta get his shit, and they tell him to move cells. Now, at first, he thought he was being moved out of the pod, and that would be pretty fucking scary because there's no cameras in the other pod. But he's got to move to cell 406, I believe. His new roommates end up being the skinheads that warned him about his honey buns last week. Remember, they're like, you may not want to make it rain with those things because you're going to get jumped. Well, now he's living with them, and he's got to go through that whole process where your roommates ask you, you know, what were you arrested for? When are your court dates? He's shitting prison turds in his pants because his story is not adding up to these two guys. Now, later, the roommates are smoking, oh, God, what was it called? It's not chronic. They're smoking cronk, crotch, I don't know, some kind of shit. And in order to fit in, Alex goes for it and he starts smoking. I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, clearly, we already know that I am the DARE program's number one alumni, drug abuse resistance education. I can still sing you the fucking song. And we got neon shirts that year, by the way, not the normal red ones, because, you know, red are for the blood gang. Anyhow, I think you got to do what you got to do to survive in prison. And if smoking conch or whatever is what you need to do so that you don't get jumped by the Aryan Nation, then puff puff. Now, Dennis, we didn't get to see too much of this episode because most of the time was spent on Tony. So he's now hanging out with this guy that's in prison named Justin. And Justin is there because he got a DUI on his 21st birthday. He's a total noob, fresh meat, if you will, you know, like the perps in prison like to call him. I'm in with them. I know the lingo at this point. So Tony and Justin, they just kind of click. And listen, they're both in there for doing basically nothing. Oh, God, I really shouldn't say that. I mean, a DUI is something. But in comparison, oh, God, that's going to come off wrong. Hopefully you guys know what I mean. He's not a murderer. He fucked up bad. But it isn't something that he's going to continue doing. Hopefully it doesn't become a cycle. So Tony, knowing, you know, real rough people as a corrections officer, he knows the difference. He's going to take Justin under his wing, keep him safe, and they can just get through this 60 days in together. Now, producers asked Tony, how did you get Justin to move into your cell because all of a sudden now he's your roommate? And Tony laughs and says that he just told Justin to pack up his shit and move in. That blows my mind because aren't they assigned cells? Like the officers are just okay with people moving in and out like it's fucking summer camp or some shit. And actually, summer camps would even let you do that. Well, this creates a whole conflict because Tony's current roommate, I think his name's like Darnell or something, this guy doesn't take showers and his ass stinks. So Tony calls him out in the most shameful and embarrassing way, but he's very serious. And that sort of juxtaposition is hilarious to me, and I don't know why. Hilarious, of course, until Justin gets his ass beat by stinky ass guy, because Justin starts ganging up on him saying, you stink, your ass smells, your sheets are all crusty. And Tony has been talking shit with Justin. But as soon as Justin starts getting too cocky about it, assuming that Tony's going to back him up, he fucks up. As soon as Krusty the Clown stands up to defend his stinky ass, Justin just goes down for the count, and Tony's sitting there on the top bunk, just kicking his little footsies, you know, like he's a kid on a swing, doesn't have any sense of loyalty to Justin to save him, which I thought was strange. Why aren't you jumping up to defend the guy that you just said you're going to take under your wing? Now, on the flip side of that, I can see why you would not want to get in on the fight, but I think Tony could have jumped up and broken it up. Like, I'm worried Justin now is going to get a bunch of people together and then jump Tony. But then again, no one's messing with Tony because they all think he's this big black guy. Their words, not mine. It's going to get interesting, though, because, of course, Dennis now wonders if Tony's in on the program. Oh, it's going to get good. Now, let's go over to the ladies' pod. Fucking Shanice. She's still complaining about eating, and yeah, it sucks. She's gluten-free. She has celiac disease, right? I get it, but when you start complaining about not only the food, but now your mini pillows and keep saying, I'm going to fucking snap, everyone's getting annoyed with her. Even Ashley, who was very patient with her, and we know Jennifer never liked her from this jump, so there's no change there. But finally, Shanice gives the verbal signal that there's an emergency. So the producers go in, they pull her out, and she starts talking about how she is tired of eating apples or some shit. So the producers ask her, is there an emergency? And she's like, no, not really. I think I just wanted to, like, I don't know, talk or maybe play a board game or something. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But they're like, you understand this is an emergency signal. You know what an emergency is, right? And she's like, yeah, emergency. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? Come on, Shanice. You can't be doing that shit because it's going to be like the boy or girl who cried wolf or poop, which we're going to get to later. That's where I would have tapped out if I even made it to this point. Now, Jennifer. Oh, man. She wakes up and she does not see Ashley, and she's shocked because she's assuming Ashley has tapped out for good. Now, at this time, another inmate tells Jennifer that she heard or saw Ashley talking to the camera, and then the camera guys came and got her. So Ashley's got to really watch her ass here because she's got a target on her back. She already has a couple people thinking that she is a plant for 60 days in, and then later, well, yeah, we'll talk about Ashley in just a minute, but I don't know if she's going to make it to the end now because I think she's going to be found out. But let's continue with Jennifer's story because this was crazy shit. There are demons that are penetrating Jennifer at night. Oh, yeah, you heard me clearly. Jennifer says that demons come into her dreams and into her cell at night, and she feels their evil penises enter her holy vaginal canal. Now, I'm sure there is some bad juju, some very bad energy in that place, but I don't think mystical devils are flying around all day. They wait for sundown And then they think Jennifer's body is the perfect landing strip, pun absolutely intended, and enter her body in order to have her speak in tongues and scare the shit out of her roommate. Now, I would do what her roommate did in that instance. I would just go along with it and be like, yeah, I had devils all up in and out of my business last night. It was like a revolving door down there because I wouldn't want crazy wackadoo above me choking me in the middle of the night thinking that I'm the fucking devil that's fisting her, whatever. Oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. Maybe the devils are entering my mind instead of my vagina, but this chick is really scaring the shit out of me. Now let's talk about Ashley. I really don't want her to go off this show. I don't want her to quit. I don't want her to be found out because I love what she's giving us this season. Now she has given the verbal signal two times because of Officer Williams. Remember that crazy bitch? Well, Ashley feels like she can't do her job as a police officer once she gets out of here because of the trauma that she's been going through in there. She doesn't want to stay in there because she feels like once she leaves, she won't be able to be a nonpartisan police officer, if that makes any sort of sense. You guys know if you watch it. Now, she doesn't want to stay there, clearly, but she doesn't want to let the other 180 women in there down and leave them to be abused by Williams. So instead, she's going to double down and blow this motherfucker up. So what does Williams do after she gets back into her cell? Knock, knock, knock. Excuse me, Ashley, may I speak to you, please? Would you enjoy being a trustee and have a job here? Holy shit. Did the devil that was in Williams' body leave and some sort of angelic creature enter Williams? Because where the fuck is this coming from? Like, this chick is a real different kind of evil. It's scary. Now, in all of 60 days in history, no participant has ever been chosen as a trustee. But all of a sudden, Ashley is. Williams hates Ashley, knows Ashley complains about her, so clearly she's trying to keep her enemy closer or flip the script. I think Williams knows what's going on, and I think she's going to tell the other inmates, and then the other inmates are going to know, and then Ashley's going to have to drop out. You can tell that I'm trying to avoid the shitty cell situation. I am going to do my best to keep my cookies intact and get through this. One of the jobs that trustees have to do is clean out the cells, and one of the cells is being occupied by a woman who has some mental health issues. The toilet in there has not been working, so she's just been shitting upon shitting upon shitting, and I think Ashley meant convex instead of concave shape, but you get the idea. There's piles of shit. There's shit all over the ceilings and the walls. Something with a towel and clothes, they have to go in there and clean it out. Point being, Ashley ends up being the one who takes charge, even over the guard. She's telling everyone what to do, get the bags, get this, get that, and they clean up this cell. I feel like there should be some sort of hazmat crew that they call in, like those, what is it, like Serve Pro or whatever. This is a bigger job than inmates should be able to do, allowed to do. Like, what if they're sticking stuff into the poo and, like, drugs and cronk or chronic, whatever the hell? This just seems like a bigger job that professionals need to do, not just anyone down the cell, you know? I mean, where do I go from here, you guys? How do I transition? Well, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to probably take some CBD and calm down, maybe have a drink to try to forget all those things that I just brought up. And then I will be back with Sister Wives. An awkward Valentine's Day. Gotta love the change from It's a Jolly Holiday with Mary to It's an Awkward Valentine's Day. Now I still love the dramatic instrumental-only intro this season. It really captures the dark side of Sister Wives, and I live for this show, even when it's kind of a boring episode like this one was. Now, at this point, we are still hearing about how unappealing Cody's sack is, and they're just whoring Cody's sack out to anyone and anyone who's willing to pay even below market value in Vegas. Now, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but you know I love talking about Cody's sack depreciating in value and sperm count. Good times, good times. Now we are back to Cody's dream house concept. I really love Christine, and I think she is expert-level negotiator with Cody. She knows how to play this game with him, and she knows how to get what she wants. First, you get a lot of compliments, heavy with the compliments, right from the jump. She doesn't let Cody see her sweat. She waits it out. She lets the other wives drag down his dreams of whatever it is, from the Vegas cul-de-sac to this dream home now, to whatever vision it is that he has, from when he had a vision of driving cross country and they kind of watered it down to a couple different caravans and all that kind of shit. I think I may be dreaming this up. Oh my God, you guys, how good would a Brady Bunch style sister wives vacation be? You know, where they go down into the Grand Canyon. We'd have Mary on a donkey being pissed off about something. Her LuLaRoe leggings probably starting to thin out. Janelle, who would be talking about her fitness journey and her self-consciousness and all that shit I can relate to, but I'm tired of hearing. And then we'd have Robin, who would... Robin would miraculously be helicoptered down to the bottom because baby Areola had the sniffles or some shit. I mean, I'm telling you, we need this. We need to write in, tweet the sister wives. We want a Grand Canyon vacation. All right, where was I? All right, how Christine's a genius. So she's letting all the other wives say what they want to say about this dream home, and she's just keeping quiet, keeping her patience. She's got a lot of it because she's the mom of Truly. But in regards to the rest of the wives, let's talk about this. Janelle doesn't give a fuck about this house. Like, she really does not care where she lives. She doesn't care who she's going to see coming and going. I think this is more from a financial aspect because we know Janelle is all business. I think she sees this as just one property. It's easier to maintain. It will be less competitive. Maybe it's also because Mary won't have her own biggest thing and she loves the fuck you to Mary. There's something more to it. I would love to get inside Janelle's head. Now, Robin is a no, and Christine, expert level wife for Cody here, calmly lays down her extreme opposition. And Mary, well, she knows she's skating on a very thin granite wet bar, so she just keeps her banana hole shut. You know, she's neither here nor there. She's going to do whatever she needs to do to have a roof over her head for now. I mean, sure, she's got that Parwan bed and breakfast, but I think she now realizes that she doesn't want to live there nor visit there, which makes it a great destination location for a B&B. You guys, book your room now. Yeah, maybe Cody should book a room for Valentine's Day. Oh, just kidding. That would be a punishment for him because he would have to have one-on-one time with Mary. Now, instead of spending one-on-one time with Cody, the wives are going to spend Valentine's Day all together. Fondue? More like fondon't. I know, that joke was just as painful as it was for Cody to hand flowers to Mary. Now, I don't know if we've had a Valentine's Day episode or not, but I know we've had these same conversations that we had during this episode about PDAs in front of one another before. Christine and Robin, they're all about the public displays of affection, but Janelle and Mary, not so much. Wonder why that is. It's a real head scratcher. Now, then we have the stupid pillows, stupid shirts, and now Mariah and Audrey. I don't know why I despise Audrey so much, but I do. I feel like she makes herself a little too comfortable in the family, or maybe she likes the camera a little too much. I don't really have a specific reason or circumstance or time that I can look back to and point to justify my annoyance with her, but she just annoys me. Maybe it's like the Nick Carter effect. You know, like, I just hate your face, and when I hate your face, I can't help it. It's a physiological response. I'm not going to apologize for it. I don't like Nick Carter and I can't stand Audrey. But here they are together. Mariah announces that she's adding to the family by one because, ta-da, Mariah and Audrey are engaged. What made this moment all worth it was to see how pissed off Mary was that she didn't know about it. She was pissed. She was annoyed that she wasn't the one to run over and hug him first. And she was saying, I'm just trying to get to my daughter. I'm just trying to get over there. Okay, Mary, it's not about you. I mean, anyone would have thought that it was about Mary because she stood next to Audrey and Mariah the entire time that they were telling about their proposal story and answering questions about getting married. Because, you know, it's Mary's daughter, in case you guys didn't know, her daughter, and she didn't tell me. Womp, womp. Mary is the fucking worst. Now, the good news out of this is that Caleb got a job. Father, son, holy LuLaRoe. I don't know what he does, but let's just be thankful he is employed and they're going to be self-sufficient, I think. Cross our fingers. Anyone know what he does, actually? I would love to know what his job is. Hopefully it's something that gets him some good health insurance and keeps him off the LuLaRoe bandwagon. All right, you guys, well, that does it for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for leaving those amazing 5-star reviews on iTunes. It really helps me out, and I greatly appreciate it. Remember to check out my sponsors in the show notes and check out Patreon and Total Request Podcast. And if you haven't already, find me on Facebook. Just search Reality TV Orchard of Snark and answer a couple questions so I know that you are not an internet troll or you're not trying to find a 90 Day Fiancé bride. You'd be surprised at some of these requests. And until next time, take care of yourself, take care of the people you love, and stay salty.